Welcome to the Friends of Bacatti podcast. I'm Brad Mell, your host, and I'm joined once again by the creator of the charity, Chris Walker. Now, if you remember at the end of episode two, we were talking about when Chris, quite by surprise, came acting head of the school, and we'll pick up this episode where we left off there. So, yeah, Chris, we mentioned, didn't we, it's not something you were expecting. You've gone up to the postal office to see about a new head. You've been given this letter. You're the acting head when you get back to the school. And you mentioned that one of the first things you did was have to sort out the administration because it wasn't in a particularly good way. So maybe let's start there, I think.
Yeah. The previous head was, it wasn't brilliantly organised, let's put it that way. So I did have to sort out things. So I had basically had to rewrite the entire timetable for every teacher at the school. I went to visit the Ministry of Education in their local offices and got them to come out and visit and have a look around the school and recommend what needs doing. So I got things like ordering books, ordering desks, that kind of thing, really. Just getting the school back into a decent shape whilst also making sure that the financial side was up to date as well. Those are the main things.
Okay, there's a few things I'd quite like to ask about there, but I think the one I'm going to start with is, so, you know, at this point, you were there as a teacher yourself. You know, you've got your own class. As we've mentioned previously, these are class sizes you're not necessarily used to. You become acting head. Are you still teaching at the same time, or are you having to find cover for your classes at this point?
When I first got the nod to be acting head, I did try and keep to doing at least a little bit of teaching, but unfortunately, the amount of time I had to spend out of the school visiting the various sort of ministry offices and what have you, it meant I wasn't really doing justice to the kids. So one of the teachers who had joined that year, he became my replacement in terms of teaching maths, because previously I had two Form 2 classes, one Form 3 class and one Form 4 class. Just teaching math. He took over those.
And then, so when you've taken this role, I'm just thinking back to your initial like VSO contract. Is this something that you have to inform them about? And what was the reaction there? Or is it just a case of, you know, you're in this school, you just progress in the way that the school allows you?
I did have to tell them, yeah, because it kind of changed a few things. The most interesting of which was when it came to the end of the contract, and when I was due to come back to the UK, normally your immediate superior writes your reference. Well, I didn't have one, so I essentially wrote my own reference. So that was quite interesting.
Okay, let's go back to what you were just saying then. So you're spending a lot of time sort of out of the school, you're going to these Minister of Education offices. So what's that experience like then? So, because it's, I don't know, I guess, what's the equivalent here? Is it like a governing body? Is it that type of thing?
I suppose it is, but it's also similar to heads here, because they have to deal with all the sort of the official ministry things. But I was also dealing with like parent things and local authority things, and anybody who passed through the school, if they were bringing goods to the school or who were hosting something, which occasionally happened, then I had to be involved in all of that. So that made it more interesting, I suppose. But I lost that sort of touch with the students as a teacher. But it went well, pretty well. So
yeah. So in those sort of first few weeks and even months, actually, are you enjoying the role? Because it sounds like you've had quite a lot to do. You know, when you're thrown in at the deep end, really, and there's an awful lot to sort out. And it's stuff like with these ministers that, as you're saying, that it's not necessarily something that you've had to do before. Is it something you're enjoying, or would you sort of rather be the teacher?
I was enjoying it, really, because I think I said in the other episode, I felt like I did more in those two terms for the school than I had as just being an everyday teacher. So yeah, I did enjoy it. I mean, obviously there were the moments where things didn't go well, but generally speaking, I had a good reception from people, particularly among the parents and the community. And that's possibly one of the reasons why I still enjoy that feeling when I get back to the school nowadays.
Yeah, that's great. So let's look at maybe some of the things that did change then while you were head. So we've talked about the administration, we've talked about the finance a little bit. What sort of developments are you putting in place while you're there?
Well, the main things that I was doing was following the guidelines of what I needed to do, which was I had the school finances in reasonable shape. So we had money to spend. So I ordered books and I ordered desks and I ordered like science equipment and maths equipment and those kind of things. And then because the way the schools are run at the secondary level, in particularly in those areas, those rural schools. And we had to get the parents to pay school fees. So there was a bit of a hesitation because they were waiting to see the school fees being spent before they were actually coming in. So there was a period of 3 or 4 weeks between me ordering these things and these things arriving. Once they arrived, then I seemed to suddenly get more parents paying their fees.
Yeah, another aspect then, you come in yourself as, you know, VSO initially. Presumably, mm-hmm. while you're head, you've got other teachers on the same program coming out to these schools. So are you sort of in charge of, like, I don't know, well, seeing them in? Did you get all the volunteers at this point?
For the last term of 1991, there was a new teacher who came to the school, Miss Eisen, who gets a mention in the next episode, I believe. And she came out as an English teacher. So she was with me for 12 months because she didn't complete the full 2 years that most volunteers do, but she stayed with me from the September until I finished in the August. We both left at the same time, but I was around in country to welcome the two new teachers who followed, who also get a mention in the next episode, which was Jane Beattie and Debbie Chadbourne, who were English and maths teachers.
Yeah, so for those of you listening now, we've already recorded our next episode. It's with a pupil that used to be at the school. It's really good. Listen to that one when it comes out. We've got, there's lots of interesting stories in there. One thing, actually, that I'm thinking of when we look at that next one with Lorraine is, and we've just mentioned it here, there's a lot of talk about fees as well, like school fees. You've just mentioned it yourself. Obviously, we know this is incredibly sort of rural area, depths of poverty in that place. And as you say, you've got people waiting to pay the fees. How difficult is that when you're sort of trying to run the school in the way that you want to?
It does make it a little bit awkward. There were some people who were upset because all I was doing was following what the previous head had done in terms of chasing people for the fees. So in theory, if they hadn't paid their fees by a certain date, then they shouldn't be in class. But often they found ways around it of waiting until I'd gone through the school and checked everybody, and then the kid would turn up when I've gone off for my cup of tea or whatever.
Actually, I think that this is something that might actually follow on from that. Let's bring it back round to sport, because I think that's where this podcast initially started, isn't it? You know, I certainly came on board because I knew about this from Scunthorpe United. We know that Friends of Piketty at the minute, that, you know, Scunthorpe's had a big involvement in that. Tell me a little bit about the sort of sport while you were there, and because I know it sort of relates directly to one pupil in particular.
Yeah, that's right. When I was there, right from the first year that I was there, there was a girl called Juliana Chirudza, and she turned out to be a real good sportswoman. She particularly, she was a sprinter and a high jumper, and there are various competitions that the schools have. So there's the usual internal ones between the students in the school themselves, and then there's the next level is called the zonal competition, where we play against, I think it's 5 or 6 other schools in the nearby area. And then it goes to the district, which goes to the main town, Moraiwa. And then it goes to the province, which is the county. From there, it goes to the nationals. And this one student, Juliana, got all the way to the national finals, which was absolutely remarkable because we're just a little tiny school out in the middle of nowhere. And yet she got all the way there, and she did it more than once.
No, that's great. So what actually happens in that then? When you get to the nationals, is it where is that sort of competition taking place, and does it bring sort of more exposure to the school, or you know what sort of does the school get out of it in a way?
I think the school gets some kind of recognition because it is such a small and sort of unusually sort of unheard of school to some extent. So it does get some recognition. In terms of the sports, it's the national competition is held in Harare at the sports grounds in the city. So there's kids from all over the country. So she's competing there and doing quite well. I think she came third in the sprint.
That's great. Okay, right. Let's go back towards the school then a little bit. I'm sure these are all sort of stories we can pull out and expand in further episodes, and you know, focus in on one story in particular. I quite like that. Let's go back to the school and look at sort of some more general ones. Right. Tell me about the light switch.
Okay, I hadn't been there very long, and the school had no electricity or no running water or anything like that. But one day, it could have been sort of late January, early February, because it's the rainy season. So the place just clouded over, really dark clouds, and we were about to get a proper thunderstorm. And I ran from my house into the school, which is not far away, maybe 100 meters. Because it was so dark, quite naturally, as I stepped into the classroom, I put my hand out and reached for a light switch, not thinking that there wasn't one there since there was no electricity. and the kids looked at me as if to say, well, "What the hell are you doing?" But it was just really, and it just suddenly dawned on me that there isn't a light switch here because there's no light.
did you explain that then? Yeah, I kind of did.
Yeah, but the kids were laughing at me for a while, which is really funny.
And that light switch story, and I do remember that. That's on that is on the blog actually. And I think there's another one. Just thinking back, go on your best question, because I think that's a good story to tell.
Yeah. I put it on the blog as what's the best question you've ever been asked, and I think back to it as the one that I was, and I walked from the school to the township called Chiguada, which is about a 40-minute walk. 30 minutes of which is basically crossing the farmlands and onto the main road. And as you get onto the main road, there's a curve in the road, and then you get to the shops. And on the curve, there's a family homestead. And as I was walking to the shops, this little girl, maybe 6 or 7, came running up the yard to the gate and shouted at me, "Why are you?" And I thought, wow, that's a bit deep.
Quite existential, that, isn't it?
Yeah. But the reality is, he was just asking, "How are you?"
Yeah.
So I just said, "I'm fine, thanks, and how are you?" And she ran off happily and laughing away. But it's definitely the best question I've ever been asked.
It sticks with you. Right, let's just before we round this one off, let's go back to the head teacher stuff, because I think that was the main focus of this one. I know we've been jumping around a little bit. Maybe let's talk about when you leave that role and sort of who follows you and what's that process like, handing over to a new head?
The most interesting thing about this was at the start of that year, 1991, there was a young University of Zimbabwe graduate who came to the school to teach Shona, called Mr. Veremu. And he was basically, apart from the other VSL volunteer, he was the only other fully qualified teacher there, apart from myself. So it just seemed natural that I train him up to take over when I left. So he started out in the January as a new teacher at school, and within 6-7 months he was the head. And he was just a young guy, but very, very, very bright. And as I think Lorraine mentions in her episode, he's very, very much sort of from a similar background to a lot of the people in that area, and he certainly fitted in very well. And I was delighted to have somebody who could take over, who I knew I could would trust to run the school well.
Sure. Right, as I say, let's end this one there. As we've been mentioning this one, our next episode is with our first guest, so that's Lorraine Maparanga. Do tune into that. It's a great conversation. It's lots of sort of local insight from actually experiencing the school from the pupil's perspective, which I think will come across really well. And that's hopefully the first of quite a few interviews we're going to have on this podcast in the near future. So thank you very much for listening to this one. Don't forget, you can donate to Friends of Bekati any point you want. The PayPal links are set up on the website. Follow on Twitter and Instagram. The more we can do to raise money for this school, the better. Okay, thank you very much. We'll see you on the next one.